Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. We're going to do a preview of this upcoming Seahawks versus Broncos game. But before we get into the show, we'll do a quick intro. My name is Grant Goldberg. I co-host this Locked On Seahawks podcast. And Spike is a writer at The Stranger. And Spike, we have a guest today. Who is our guest?
This is a classic Seattle matchup in a lot of ways. You know, Seahawks-Broncos goes back to the old AFC West days, so we need to bring in a real rival for this preview podcast. So we brought in, I do the sports coverage for The Stranger, we brought in Seattle Weekly, Seth Sommerfeld, lifelong Broncos fan, to really bring the heat to a rivalry matchup that had been dormant, I would say. Kind of like the Weekly and the Stranger. Seth, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. We'll keep it dormant and ignore like the Super Bowl that happened recently. That's fine in my book.
Okay. Yeah. The Seahawks did beat the Broncos in a Super Bowl. They then lost another Super Bowl. There's been a lot of that's been rehashed a lot in the last day, as Sports Illustrated dropped a huge piece on the decline of the Seahawks dynasty. It's pretty well-worn territory, the piece. I think it's well-reported. It's worth a read, but we're not going to dive too deep into that today, except to say it's hilarious that Richard Sherman is the obvious anonymous source for everything. It's like an anonymous former member of the Legion of Boom said, "I went to Stanford and I hate Russell Wilson." So it's great. You should read it. But we're going to dive in to this matchup. And in order to do that, we're gonna pepper Seth with some questions about the Broncos. Seth, how are you feeling about this season? And specifically, how are you feeling about retaining Vance Joseph going into this season?
Well, I'm feeling pretty pessimistic about this game coming up in general. I think my sort of hot take is both teams are not very good, but I think the Broncos are worse. I loathe Vance Joseph with a passion that really is hard to describe. I'm fairly confident if it weren't for Hugh Jackson, he would be the worst coach in the NFL. Being in Seattle and a Mariners fan, I've had to root for people like Mike Hargrove and John McLaren and Eric Wedge as manager. And as a Broncos fan, I had to endure the Josh McDaniels era, which I'm still not sure if he was just a secret operative sent by Bill Belichick to sabotage the Broncos.
Spoiler alert, Seth, he was.
Yeah, and all those guys are vastly superior to Vance Joseph. I think the Broncos roster is very talented, but I think their coach is horrendous, which is why I don't think they'll be any good this year. Just kind of for a primer, Vance, for those Seahawks fans not as familiar, the Broncos were not good last year, and they started off good. They were 3-1 coming into a bye week, coming off of a bye week. And they were playing the New York Giants, who had yet to win and were coached by Ben McAdoo, and managed to lose that game at home 23-10, lost 8 straight. The only wins they had for the rest of the year were against the Colts and Jets. And the only other wins they had for the entire rest of the year included the Raiders, Cowboys, and Chargers. So not exactly impressive wins. But more to the point, I don't think that Vance Joseph really understands defense, despite being a defensive coach.
That's not good.
No. So for a little DVOA context, for those who like to use the football advanced metrics, coming into last year, the Broncos had the number one DVOA defense for 2 straight years. Last year, that fell to number 10. And in 2017, they might have had the best pass defense ever. They had a DVOA of negative 31.1 on the pass defense. And for context, for those unfamiliar, it's kind of based on zero being average. And really good defenses are -4 to -6%. The Philadelphia Eagles were the second best at -11.8, and the Broncos were 31.1. So they were just so far advanced, and they just cratered. And it doesn't seem like an aberration or a fluke, because Vance Joseph, before he was the Broncos coach, was the Dolphins coach and our defensive coordinator for 1 year. And he took a Dolphins defense that was ranked 17th in DVOA the prior year and dropped them all the way to 25th. And he got a head coaching job for that. So, yeah, I just don't have faith that he's really a leader.
Yeah, he's also, he's brought nothing to the table. I mean, you've systematically destroyed him, and you haven't even brought up the allegations in his personal life that are, for Seahawks fans, let's just say they're Tom Cable-esque. Should
it's basically if Tom Cable was your head coach, not just running your offensive line for a few years. It's a lot of sexual harassment, assault, claims that weren't fully investigated back in 2003 when he was a coach at Colorado University. And it's one of those things where the news broke kind of at the perfect time for him last year. It was right after he was hired in January. And if the story had kind of broken maybe during the season, it probably would have been like, oh, the axe falling on him. But it was a little early in the Me Too movement for things to have the proper gravity, I guess.
I guess. But man, they you guys were terrible last year.
Yeah.
So you say that both these teams could be very bad this year, and that's something, you know, look, I'm more pessimistic than Grant on the Seahawks this year. Is there a spark of optimism in your heart around this Broncos team? And if so, what fuels that fire?
Well, there's the obvious quarterback should be an upgrade. Which is the point that everybody made. Case Keenum should be an upgrade over the rather horrible options we had last year. And if the offense can be decent, then, you know, we also have running back Royce Freeman, who pretty much everybody likes teams in the NFL. And we also had the defensive rush talent there, you know, adding Bradley Chubb to pair alongside Von Miller could just be a nightmare for opposing teams. It's just a matter of, can Vance and his coaching staff come up with a defense that actually works with them?
Okay. We should probably take a quick break and then really break down this matchup between the Seahawks and the Broncos, because these are two huge question mark teams. Grant, you want to take us into a break? I've just been dominating this conversation as a damn stranger writer is wont to do.
You know what? I let you take the reins. I let you, throw up some heat checks. It was fine. But yeah, stay tuned for more of the Locked On Seahawks podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Guys, the Seahawks are back. The Broncos are back. They're going to play football this Sunday. If you want to place a bet and make the game more interesting, the place to do it online is mybookie.ag. There's fast payouts. There's a quick, easy to use interface, whether it's on the web, on a mobile interface, it's all the same. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON on your first visit to mybookie.ag, you get a 100% return on your first deposit. So go ahead, take advantage of that promo code. It's locked on when you visit mybookie.ag. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant, Spike, and Seth, and we're going to talk a little bit about the matchup between the Seahawks and Broncos, where, you know, we feel confident, where Seth feels confident. And so I guess, I'll have the first question. It's about Case Keenum, because I wanted to know how confident you feel about him going up against a Seattle defense that's maybe not build to be as good as they were before, given that they've lost so many Pro Bowl caliber guys. How do you feel about Case Keenum and this Denver Broncos offense against the Seattle defense?
I'd say I'm pretty lukewarm about Case Keenum against your defense. Again, I feel like we have the weapons this year, the Broncos do, sorry for the whole we, to make the improvement on offense. But there are the red flags with Case Keenum that last year was really the only year where he's ever been super successful. And he did that with a talent core around him that included Diggs and Thielen and Kyle Rudolph and McKinnon and Cook at running back. And dropping him into the Broncos scenario, you know, we still have Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, but that's kind of it, other than a rookie running back who people like. So I don't know if we're going to be able to exploit the still figuring it out Seahawks defense as much as we'd like to. I think Emmanuel Sanders might be able to lining up in slot a little bit more this year and trying to take advantage of matchups that way. But other than that, I'm not crazy excited.
Well, and that opens up the question of how's your offensive line right now? The Seahawks are a big question mark across the defensive line, especially in terms of edge rushers, with Frank Clark barely getting action in the preseason, the team, Deion Jordan barely getting action, and rookie Rasheem Green looking great, but still being like 19 years old or something. I think he's younger than Grant, which is horrifying to think about.
Yeah, he just turned 21.
Yeah, that's too young. That's too young to be impactful against great offensive lines. How are you feeling about Denver's offensive line? Is it a great offensive line?
It is not a great offensive line. It's kind of funny being based in Seattle and being a Broncos fan. The Seahawks and Broncos have basically had mirror image O-line catastrophes for the past few years. I'd even argue that the Broncos O-line 2 years ago was worse than the Seahawks O-line that year, where it was considered the worst. But the Broncos, I think, would have actually made the playoffs if they had a good O-line that year, because Trevor Siemian, people forget, was actually decent that year. And that's another thing that I'm a little concerned about with Case Keenum, is that people give Vance a pass because he had bad quarterbacks last year. But Trevor Siemian got significantly worse under Vance Joseph's watch. But back to the O-line, I think we're kind of in the same mirror image boat as y'all are, where this year it seems like they could be competent and they have a little more talent, but it's still like actually do it before I trust that they're going to be able to do it. They have Ronald Leary at guard, who they brought in last year, who's a really solid interior. Garrett Bowles, the tackle they drafted last year, isn't like setting the world on fire as you'd want with a first round tackle. They brought in Valdahir, who used to be on the Cardinals, to be right tackle, and Connor McGovern, who's sort of the glue guy backup that they've had for years, finally stepped into a starting role, and I think that'll be a positive. And then Matt Paradis is just a legitimately great center. It could be all right. I'm not afraid of your passing rush right now that much, but it might be able to hold up and at least open up some holes for Freeman. Because again, like you guys, it's just the running game has suffered the past few years because the O-line has been so bad that there haven't been holes for anybody to run through.
Yeah, and you know, that's been the biggest issue for Seattle. Last season, it was just health in the running back group and being able to get any significant traction. I'm going to flip the script over. You mentioned running game, and one of the guys that's going to, you know, be tasked with stopping it is Shaquem Griffin. And you know, he's young, but he's fast. He has a lot of energy, but maybe he over-pursued sometime. Is there a rookie on the Denver Broncos that you're really excited about watching?
Again, it's mainly Royce. Freeman.
Non Royce Freeman.
John Elway's draft history has been a little spotty, to say the least, especially on the. Bradley Chubb, again, that's an obvious one.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be excited about an obvious one. Like, teams are allowed to draft a guy in the first round who's good.
Like, you have Bradley Chubb, we have Michael Dixon.
And I'd say that out of the, I guess, Sutton, the wide receiver, who's slotted to be our number three wide receiver, is more of a kind of sleeper. I know Cody mentioned him when he was talking from Locked On Broncos, when he was talking earlier in the week, that maybe the Broncos have finally found a number three receiver. But they also, John Elway cut both the receivers that he drafted last year already, and has, you know, drafted the likes of Cody Latimer and a lot of very questionable skilled players on offense over the years. So I'm not exactly thrilled, but I'm hopeful.
I'll just say, I still think Cody Latimer is going to pan out. I really liked it. That's not true. I liked him coming out of college, though. It is a mirror, but I'm just thinking, like, first-round tackle, not setting the world on fire. That's something Seahawks fans are well acquainted with. Drafting wide receivers in the mid-rounds and then cutting them a year later. Goodbye, Amara Darbo. You know, like, there is almost too much similarity between these two teams outside of the quarterback position, where the Seahawks are pretty lucky. How do you feel about your rebuilt secondary, and specifically, how do you feel about moving on from Aqib Talib?
Yeah, that is definitely a concern, because, you know, like I mentioned, pass defense was the spot that they took a huge step back last year. Going from maybe the best pass defense ever to number 15 in the league, and actually like a negative compared to the league average. And then like Aqib Talib was a dick forever, and it wasn't actually a likable player to cheer for, but he was good. And now we've basically had Bradley Roby, who's a capable third cornerback, never felt like he, despite being a high pick, was totally living up to it, and now he's kind of thrown in the fire. But beyond him, it gets really sketchy. We had to sign Adam frickin' Pac-Man Jones a couple weeks ago, and he might be the number three cornerback. If not, it's a rookie. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Yidam from Boston College. And so we have Chris Harris Jr., who's a bastion of light and will move around the field and shut down whoever he is lined up against. But I think the farther you get down on the depth chart for the Seahawks receiving is really where they might be able to exploit the Broncos, because the Broncos, you know, like, I think Brandon Marshall, ex-Bronco, might be poised for a big day. As long as, for some reason, they're not guarding him with, unless they put Chris Harris on him instead of Doug Baldwin for some reason.
Seems unlikely. I just Googled Adam Jones to see if he's older or younger than Brandon Marshall. They're the same age. They're both 34. Yeah. But the first thing that comes up is a video of him beating up an airport worker this summer. Like, what is happening? Like, I mean, Adam Pac-Man Jones is the sort of guy where, you Google him and anything could happen. But literally, in July, he was just beating up a random guy at an airport. Like, that was this July. That's
just
not that long
things
ago.
People do.
I've never done that. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's maybe that's just the stranger. But we don't usually beat up airport workers in July.
Yeah,
that's for the holidays.
So I'd say that the secondary isn't the best, and also the Broncos have been pretty awful the past few years about covering tight ends and running backs in the receiving game. So I don't know how healthy CJ Procise is, but but that would be, if you can get some receiving out of the backfield, that would be a way to pick apart kind of the Broncos defense and maybe limit the pass rush by just having those dump off throws.
Yeah, I think pass catching backs. I mean, it's clearly been an emphasis in the preseason. It's something Schottenheimer. It's like the one thing that you can get excited about that he wants to do. And I would be and all the running backs on our roster are capable of receiving. So I would be not surprised if that's how we tried to exploit you guys, especially to keep the pass rush on its heels. That feels like if the Seahawks win this game comfortably, it's going to be a lot of short passes to running backs working and then going to and becoming explosive plays.
Yeah, definitely, given what Schottenheimer said about wanting to get all four running backs involved in the game too.
Yeah. All right, well, we should take another quick break. We will come back. We're going to pick this game. We're going to pick it against the line, which is Broncos favored by 3. So we'll be back right after this, Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant, Spike, and Seth, and we're going to pick this game. The Broncos are favored by 3 against the Seahawks at home in Denver. And I guess I'll throw it to Seth first. Who do you got in this game? You sounded pretty lukewarm on the Broncos' chances, but like you said, you're not very, you know, high on either team. So, you know, what are you thinking for this game?
I would not only take the points if I was a Seahawks fan, I would just bet the money line as a Seahawks fan. I think if Pete Carroll can't draw up a game plan to outcoach Vance Joseph, that's a bad omen for your season. And yeah, I think I just trust Russell Wilson and kind of some of the infrastructure that you guys have a little bit more than what is available on the Broncos side. I guess, you know, the one red flag might be, can Michael Dixon adjust to the mile high altitude, and maybe his precision punts just bounce into the end zone and suddenly the field position game is a little different.
Yeah. Maybe. I agree. My weird pick is coming next week. I think the Bears are going to beat the Seahawks, spoiler alert, which is horrifying to say, unless Mitch Trubisky really is terrible this week. But I'm going to agree. I think the Seahawks got this. I think that there's the version of this where they lose is a really close slugfest and a really hideous to watch game. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the version where they lose is like 17-14, 12-10, just yeah. Something truly hideous and awful, especially with Earl Thomas back, preventing just that big explosive play for the Broncos to Demaryius Thomas in the middle of the field. You know what I mean? Like, that one big play, if we don't have Earl Thomas in there, I could see the Broncos getting ahead and grinding it out behind Royce Freeman. As it is, I don't see that happening. So I might not, if I were logging onto my bookie and using the promo code Locked On, I would probably make the safe play and take those 3 points just because God only knows. You know what I mean? Like, this could get close. This could be dicey. But I think the Seahawks win this game.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with both of you. It's a game where you think the Seahawks will be able to win. They have enough talent to put points on the board, even against the Denver pass rush and a Denver rush defense that looks to be like it can combat the Seattle offense very well. I think that. The core players, the core talented players of the Seahawks are pretty well spread out throughout the team. And so that gives them enough players to rally around and build around and just to get the win in this game. I completely agree with you, Spike. It just has the feel of like when the Seahawks travel to Carolina and they just play those super ugly games against the Panthers and escape with like a 5-point, 12-7 win. So I agree with both of you.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, okay. Wow. A shocking dose of widespread optimism. Well, I guess in Seth's case, it's pessimism. So sorry, Seth.
It's okay.
Yeah. Well, so for Locked On Seahawks listeners, we're saying week one, Seahawks are going to go 1-0. Every week is a championship week under Pete Carroll. This week just happens to be a championship week against a poorly coached opponent with developing talent. One last question before we wrap this up. Seth, hypothetically, Broncos go 5-11 and 7-9 this year. Move on from Vance Joseph. Do you think they have the talent bedrock in place where they bring in a good coach? You know, maybe everyone says Sean McVay, but like they bring in an interesting offensive-minded coach. Do you think that they've got the talent in place where they can move forward quickly in next year or the year after?
Yeah, I think that like if it was Wade Phillips coaching this defense, and even if it was still Gary Kubiak's rice cracker offense doing it, I think this team could be a potential playoff team. I think the coaching is really what's holding them back, and I don't know, maybe this time next year it'll be the Jim Harbaugh-led Broncos.
Oh, boy.
Stanford reunion for old Harbaugh and John Elway.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow, what a horrifying vision of things to come.
Yeah.
Also, I just tweeted this, but the fact that Richard Sherman was basically an anonymous source in an article suggesting that he was personally undermining the Seahawks all of last year, Harbaugh was right, is a horrifying thing to think. And, I mean, Sherman did get us that Super Bowl and played incredibly for 5-6 years. So, you know, on the one hand, Harbaugh was right. On the other hand, Harbaugh was very, very wrong about Sherman as an NFL player. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. All right, I think that's a good way to end it. Grant, what do we got to say before we sign off for the day?
Well, first we want to thank Seth for coming on the show. Seth, do you have anything to plug or, you know, talk about before we end it?
Pick up the current issue of Seattle Weekly or check it out online at seattleweekly.com. I have a cover feature this week on the Seattle Seahawks, who are a football team you might be familiar with. Just kind of about, kind of probably a less reported through version of that Sports Illustrated article, just about the kind of like cultural shift. And maybe the Seahawks might not be good because everything changed so quickly and they lost 6 All-Pro players. And then if you want to keep up on Seattle arts and culture or random wrestling thoughts or things like that, my Twitter is at Seth Sommerfeld, SethSommerfeld.
Yeah, and you wrote a great piece on the Storm. So for all y'all like me, who have jumped on the Storm bandwagon hard, give that a read. It's the headline piece of the Seattle Weekly right now. I'm going to start writing again for The Stranger on Monday, so get excited for that from me. Grant, you got anything to promote?
No, I really don't. I've just been really logging in these hours to the new Spider-Man game, so I have that going for me. I fully expected Seth to be like, don't read The Stranger and like totally ignite the rivalry. But I gotta say, I'm a little disappointed. But
yeah, well, Spike's good. You can read Spike. There might be some other Stranger writers, who I won't name, who are a little questionable. And I think,
not saying anything, not saying anything.
Spike's gonna be that anonymous source in the downfall of the Stranger piece by Sports Illustrated. But yeah, thank you guys for listening to the show. We want to ask you again, please leave a 5-star review if you're a fan of the show. If you have any questions, things about the show that you want to relay to us, then go ahead, use iTunes, use Twitter. We have a Facebook page, Locked On Seahawks, and we have a Facebook group. It's just Locked On Seahawks group. And make sure you join all of that. You interact with us. We try to be accessible. So take advantage of everything that's in front of you if you want to reach out to us. We really appreciate it. If you have a Seattle-based business and want to, you know, advertise on the show, reach out to us. We'd be happy to work something out. And so, yeah, again, thanks, Seth. Thank you guys for listening. And for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Finn, also signing off.